There's two basic messages that most of us have received about spirituality and particularly about meditation. Two basic, apparently very different messages, even radically different. If you ask most people, are you an individual? Pretty much across the board, the answer will be yes. Yes, I am an individual. And if you ask them, how do you know this? They will begin to talk about, in most cases, their experience in some way. They will talk about what it's like to be an individual. The belief in there is that I am an individual. And when spiritual teachings or meditation teachings appear to this so-called individual, these teachings begin to be interpreted that if understood, if practiced, not only can they help you relax, help you release, help you transcend or dissolve limitations, restrictions, issues, stress, the assumption is this individual or entity can become fulfilled, can become complete, can heal, can become liberated. The presupposition is that there is someone who can get free. There is someone who awakens. And there's a lot of reinforcement for this belief perception. And of course, with this mobilization that I'm referring to, there's an inevitable repetition compulsion that goes like this. It plays out in the mind and the body. And it says something like, that which I'm looking for is something, and it isn't in what is happening, at least not yet. There's something that needs to be attained, whether in the material sense, this is a very popular one, becoming more fulfilled or happy by attaining things materially. All we have to do is look at advertising and see what it's saying. Or it's more subtle than that. You can have refined feelings, refined states, refined sensations. You can become concentrated. And when you're concentrated, if you can stay concentrated, then your stresses and strains and difficulties will go away. And if you buy it and you go for it, you might find they were right. But when these experiences, regardless of how you might say big, high, subtle, they may be, prove ultimately to be empty, and therefore to be actually unsatisfactory, What happens then to this attaining tendency? Let's call it an attaining tendency. It's amazing. It tends to carry on. In the face of experiences that by nature are unsatisfactory because they don't last, doesn't mean they're bad, doesn't mean they're wrong. It just means they can't ultimately fulfill because they can't be sustained. Even in the face of this, what's curious is to see that this apparent individual, this presupposition, this belief perception, can still attain something. It starts to go, no, it's not an experience. It's in this thing called the unconditioned. Or if the mind grabs on, it's in this thing called the unborn. It's in this thing called the undying. It's in this thing called enlightenment. I don't know what it is. I can't think my way there. I'm not sure if I've ever met anyone who's there. This bundle of thoughts, this fantasy, projection, it's shocking to actually see it. To see how subtle and pervasive it is. And to recognize this so-called individual is a seeker. And that this seeker, strangely enough, never really knows what it's seeking. It can't sort it out. Except to keep thinking about it. Or try to stop thinking about it. So what if one then said, okay, let me just like unhook. Let me just unhook from this seeking and just kick back and be. Do you hear the contradiction in there? I'm going to unhook from seeking and I'm going to kick back and just be. Now I have to, in a sense, try to be. And as much as you might say, okay, there's no seeking in the mind at all. Look a little closer, and under the veneer, the subtlety of that seeking is still going on. If there's suffering, if there's unsatisfactoriness, if there's fear, if there's confusion, in almost all cases, there is then seeking. Listen to the story in the minds of humans. Watch the story in your own mind. See if this is true. As long as they're seeking, then there must be some sense that things aren't quite right. Or maybe really not right. And it needs to somehow be made right, aligned, balanced, adjusted, organized, healed, energized. I'm not quite right. Life's not quite right. The world's not quite right. Needs help. And let's make a very clear distinction right now. If there's even a modicum of interest, passion, impulse to serve and help others, one can see this is a gigantic, endless project. service work. Let's be clear that service work, if you're drawn to it, doesn't automatically connote that things are wrong. Even Ananda, the revered attendant of the Buddha, the historical Buddha, Ananda was honored as one whose compassion excelled his wisdom. If you look at the teachings, it's very clear. You've got the wing of the bird that's compassion. You've got the wing of the bird that is wisdom. And these two wings allow the bird of awakening to fly. He was honored as one whose compassion excelled his wisdom, and so much so that a Buddha once admonished him by saying, "Those who concentrate entirely upon helping the world cannot escape from its passions and delusions." Where are those passions and delusions? In the minds and the hearts and the bodies of humans. That's the world he's talking about. That's quite interesting, isn't it? Don't get over concentrated on even serving. It gets more complicated in many cases than this. If there's a sense of having been wounded, who hasn't had that, by life's events or via treatment from others, this often further fortifies and complicates the sense or belief that there's someone in here who's been harmed, who's been wounded, and therefore needs to heal or transform. And the question here, of course, is what has actually been harmed, and what is it that needs to heal? Some of you may know this very personally. If you've experienced abuse, many people who've been abused by others will say that the way the other spoke to them, the intention of those words, the energy, the motivation behind those words was more painful than when they physically hit me. What is it that's getting wounded, and what is it that might need to get healed? Not getting what is wanted in life is not the dilemma here. The dilemma is the apparent individual who seeks, appears unfulfilled, believes it needs to be healed, believes it needs something. Stop right here. If it's okay to use the word, what does the apparent individual actually need? Where is the individual? Where are the individuals in this room? Look around a little. Where are the individuals? There's bodies sitting here, yeah? Everybody cool with that? Bodies sitting around in a meditation hall. Where's the individuals? Anybody see one? Tricky, huh? Subtle. So if it's a little difficult to see the individual, what's all this about the individual needing this and needing that and moving here and going there and separate from God and all the rest. I'm pointing here at what often gets hooked on to the plethora of teachings on this planet that suggest that awakening, that suggest that liberation, that suggest that this that is most important, you might say, to those who it's important to, is something that's arrived at gradually. It's something that's arrived at progressively. And this structure of thought, ideas, is extremely popular in most of the world's major religions and spiritual traditions. Can you notice inside those progressive teachings, those gradual awakening teachings, not only are they for your mind, not only are they for that one who wants to understand, but it presupposes in some cases that there's a one who can understand. That there's an individual who is progressing. And since nobody raised their hand very quick and said, I see the individual, and we float just a little bit there and go, ooh, not so sure. The possibility can arise immediately, right here and now, to investigate before we even begin this pursuit. Is there an individual in here? And if so, where is he, she? In many cases, this question I'm asking has not been tackled. It's been completely jumped over. And one, so to speak, enters the fray, and we've only been sitting for a little less than a day. Have you noticed the fray? Or is everything super tingly warm and smooth all the time? Because if it is, in some cases it is, warm and tingly and smooth all the time, that is also the fray. It's just more pleasant. What about this fundamental question? Can we look at that now? Is there an individual in here? And if so, where is he or she? Anybody see it? Where is it? Here? That's a thought. There's an individual, isn't it? Feeling. With a thought added, there's an individual in the feeling. Find the individual in the breathing. Where's the individual? There's a thought added to the breathing. I'm breathing. I'm an individual breathing. If we can't find an individual to whom these things are happening, and yet still find feelings of stress, discomforts, confusions, or apparent limitations and whatnot, then what does the meditation say about this? What is this meditation for? In some cases, this is a relatively small amount of time, relatively small investment of energy and so forth. But on the other hand, this is quite substantial. One can pull off a lot of mischief and a lot of so-called fun in a weekend. and even more. What happens to these experiences of difficulty, just in case there might be some, when it's recognized that there doesn't seem to be anyone that they belong to? And then, what about, what is this awakening business if there doesn't seem to be anyone who's actually awakening? Because if there isn't anyone who doesn't seem to have or own the difficulty, then who's going to awaken? That's first message. Second message. Some of us have heard it. It's probably not as frequently heard as the message that I just shared. Second message suggests this. All there is immediacy. All there is life as it is. And within this life as it is, there's what we could call being, and there's becoming. Process, life as process, is becoming. And it's one expression of being. It's being, becoming. And it's complete and it's whole unto itself, and it needs nothing added or subtracted from it. It's complete, and there isn't actually an individual inside it. Strange one. But this flowers out into a human experiences the complete fulfillment of desire. Not by acting out and getting things for that desire, but one sees desire for what it really is. This energy that appears, manifests, disappears, and it's recognized that that very thing that you might have thought you needed to eliminate, to not have desire, suddenly becomes exactly what it's always been, clearly and complete unto itself. Probably not so, though, if there's somebody who's got a problem with it or somebody who believes they need to fulfill it. I'm talking about desire seen clearly, which means it's cut loose, it's free from somebody who's having it. And that refers to any state. Fear will do, confusion will do, aversion will do. Just pick one today, something that happened with a little bit of kick. What's being pointed at is that very thing. It might have seemed to be the most difficult thing that happened today. Lo and behold, reveals itself as complete unto itself. In this message, it's suggested that there's nothing to attain except the realization that there's nothing to attain, which seems like nothing. But when it's recognized how much energy is actually mobilized, invested, repetitiously, compulsively invested in attaining, when that energy opens, releases, it's a big bang. And in some cases, people get emotional about that, and they cry a lot, and they get hysterical, and they go around, like one person I know, kissing refrigerators with ecstasy. That's a weird one, isn't it? Kissing refrigerators. He'd calm down. I mean, he's kissing humans, too, if they let him. He's kissing everything. That could get you arrested in Tampa or other places. nothing to attain except the realization that there's nothing to attain. Slow down right there. We got a conceptualization about nothing, don't we? Just like we got a conceptualization about pretty much everything, including everything. Is that what nothing is? What you think it is? And how do you reckon this one? The Buddha apparently said, I attained nothing from complete, perfect liberation. Sounds like he's pointing at the end of the need to try to attain. These so-called nice-sounding words are only that. One could go around saying, wow, that sounds good, I think I'll go with that one. Nothing to attain except the realization that there's nothing to attain. I'm going to contemplate that. I'm going to think about that. I'm going to realize it. I hope. Maybe. I'm going to find out, if I can, what nothing is. Who's going to do that? How's that going to happen? Somebody show me the path. Again, another sometimes disturbing realization. This contracted sense of I or me that seems to join into the tight shoulder or the tight back or the tight knee or the contracted head, whatever, is actually fear of unconditional freedom. Can you feel the freedom in the space around these bodies? Can you sense this freedom? This is free out here. The only thing that appears to not be free sometimes in this room is stuff going on inside this body-mind. That cushion has nothing to prove, right? Doesn't need to be better. Doesn't need to improve itself. Doesn't need to heal itself. Doesn't need to get liberated. Doesn't need to change. Doesn't need to be a different color. Although somebody's cushion today disappeared in here. I'm not sure who might have accidentally picked it up. Had a conversation in the dining room about a cushion disappearing. It's an interesting thing that happens sometimes. You come here with next to nothing, and then somebody takes what you got left. It's been known to generate some disturbance. In this case, in this little story, it generated laughter. What if somebody walked up to you and said, I'll give you freedom right now, but you're going to have to give me your body and you'll never get it back. I'm not going to tell you what it is on the other side. This is the deal. Okay? You got to give me your body, you never get it back. Ever. It's gone. Would you ask more questions? Would you say, is there any other way? Can I keep a little bit of my body and go over? We cannot get our head around what unconditional freedom is. We can't even get our head around what freedom is, except that it's right here, so much so that we often overlook it. And I'm talking mostly now relative freedoms. You know, to eat a nice meal and have it made for us. To sit in a space and be able to actually do this. To not have weapons being fired off around us, or you go up to your room and somebody has ransacked it. I mean, we take for granted how actually safe it is here. And not only that, but even if I'm just a little bit interested in this stuff, There's people all around us. All around us. Even within eyesight. Who would have absolutely no interest in any of this that I'm saying. Be absolutely turned off by words like unconditional freedom. And are they any more or less free than us? What is this freedom? Seems to be one of the most important aspects of being a human being. If you don't have it, you want it. If you feel you've got some of it, you might want more. If you feel you've got enough, you hang for a while. And then that changes. But unconditioned freedom, freedom that has no conditions, what's that point at? Sooner or later, we begin to recognize what this seeker really is. We begin to recognize that this seeker is this contracted energy process. It's an energy process that, strangely enough, is seeking its own release. When it's mobilized, it can't quite see this, but it's looking for death. It's trying to go over the cliff and dissolve. How can something that keeps reinforcing itself release itself? That's where Sigmund Freud had some real insight, I think, when he talked about this repetition compulsion. Human beings are compulsively inclined to repeat certain things, including the idea of release, as if, key words, to go beyond. But when the repetition compulsion is being fully recognized, one sees the heart of habit. One sees the heart of it. How can an apparent individual rid itself of itself? And here's the key. The key rests in seeing experientially what is meant by the word apparent. If you look up the word apparent in some dictionaries, you might see that it is a synonym for appearance. Appearance as an antonym to abiding or stable. Since we can't find the individual in here, in these bodies, now I would ask, is there anything here that's abiding and stable? Clearly, it's not the breath. Clearly, it's not the feeling. Clearly, it's not the thought. Clearly, it's not the perception. Clearly, it's not the imagination. Clearly, it's not the memory. Clearly, it's not the sense perceptions. Is there anything stable and abiding here? And here's the answer. The only thing that is truly stable is nothing. Spiritual pursuit, and in many cases, that is inside spiritual practices, is the very movement or activity that hides what is longed for. Because what is longed for is the end of longing. And the good news is that every human being sitting here and every human being floating all over this planet right now, and by the way, we are floating in space, right? tiny little speck, blue-green speck in the vastness, floating. We're floating. Every human being has touched this. Every human being has seen, to some extent, the end of longing. For instances. Because what does longing do? It appears, it disappears, it appears, it disappears, like everything else. Appears and disappears. What is sought, which is hidden from the seeker by already being everything. Let's take an example. Nature, synonym for Dharma, or, as I've been saying today, the truth of the way things are. This fall, it's October 18th, it's fall, right, sort of. Even in Florida, there's a fall. Sort of. It's not like New England, but it's still a fall. This fall will not try to be better than, just like this cushion, it will not try to be better than last fall. Nor will it think of itself as unfulfilled, unliberated, unenlightened, or unhealed. It will not try to be different than it is, and yet its process or becoming aspect will naturally transform, which is beautiful, isn't it? While simultaneously, it's simply being itself and going nowhere. I used to imagine the dolphins were more together than us. Maybe they still are, I don't know. But this friend of mine, who's quite studied, this Harvard graduate on these matters, I guess that means you know, he said, no, they're really, really into power. And not only that, but they got a real big thing about sex. And they really got those two going together. And then he started describing to me, in some very graphic details, what they do and how they do it, you know, and this pecking order and these deals they make and the way that they work it. It sounded pretty aggressive, the way he was describing it. There's actually a triple gem in there of a strange kind that we had another one too, and I don't know whether the dolphins have their own version of this. Our big issues tend to sit around money, sex, and power. And of course, the biggie that kind of gets that all going and twisted is the power piece. Who's got it? Who doesn't? What are they doing with it? So you go, okay, whoa. Maybe this power thing is about becoming empowered. And you begin to recognize life itself is already empowered as itself. That the fall, the leaves, the river, the clouds, the sky, this room doesn't need to be anything other than what it is. We're the only thing sitting around here apparently thinking it needs to be different. Life is not needing or trying to prove anything at all. Does the moon need to shine with its reflection from the sun? No, it just does. Does the blade of grass or the leaf need a wobble in the wind? No, it just does. And it does this without identification. It's got nothing to prove. Nothing to sort out. Nothing to understand. Because it's nothing. Now that's tricky. because our mind, again, just jumps on that nothing thing and goes, I don't understand that. I want to understand that, or I don't understand that. Beingness is just like this, and it's not identified with anything or anyone. Looking for beingness is assuming or believing that it's been lost. The reason why beingness cannot be found is that it's never been lost, and it hides as already being everything, including, strangely enough, the longing for it. It wouldn't be fair, would it, to say longing, you have to go, especially when longing is right up? It wouldn't be fair to say seeking, you have to go, you need to drop. That wouldn't be fair, would it, to seeking? To longing? You don't get to be here. You need to go away. The strange thing that happens is this isn't it in the mind. This isn't it, this isn't it, this isn't it, this isn't it. Not yet, at least. This isn't it. Obscures the fact that this is it. Whether that veneer, that layering is a thick one or an extremely thin one. And I'm talking about a simple thought that's identified with or believed in as more than just a stream of sensation, as I suggested this afternoon. That's what thoughts are. They're just sensation that just appears and disappears. This is not the way. When people are trying to understand the way, what is the way, what is the way, what is the way, and then they're trying to carve out what isn't the way. This is not the way shifts into all there is the way. What can happen, and it's miraculous and it's mysterious, and one could think about it, but you'll never figure it out. What can happen as we meditate is a falling away of what was never needed. What ultimately falls away is the belief in something that never actually existed as one believed it did. And it's you. It's the individual. And that apparent individual unfolds like an unconsciously tight muscle. And that's what releases the seeker from the repetition compulsion of seeking. It's really only thinking and perception that makes us believe that process of life is happening in time, and that it has duration, and that it's going somewhere. Actually, all there is instantaneous appearances of phenomena. As the monk Munindra said, empty phenomena rolling on. And none of this is going anywhere in the sense of arriving. Everything that's born dies. Everything that arises passes. Nothing lasts. And this, of course, includes the sense of the arising and passing of the perception belief of individuality. And here we see how this sense of individuality is tied up in, for many people, this bodily contracted energy. Phenomena all experience is empty in the sense that it doesn't last. It isn't solid or fixed. So it's empty of solidity, fixation, and it's empty of permanence. And so, again, for many, this sense of self is a bodily contracted feeling. And the assumption about what that bodily contracted feeling means. It means this needs to go. It means this is in the way. And the real kicker is it means I am in here. I'm having this. And yet, when there is a settling back, as we're exploring, and the contradictions of contraction are simply allowed to unfold, it's here that we get the sense of letting everything be as it is. This is a huge teaching. The discovery of letting everything be as it is. And if we look, we can see there isn't anyone that these feelings or states and contractions are actually belonging to or happening to. And then the sense of letting everything be as it is opens out into everything is already always being as it is. In the former, the belief is there that I am allowing this. I am allowing this. And it feels much better than not allowing this most of the time. Not allowing this that's already happening is pure neurosis. To be in resistance to that which is already occurring. I don't mean like I'm going to work with it once it's occurring. I'm talking about flat out, this is not allowed. Flat out denial. And I'm just talking about something that comes up when we're sitting and meditating. I'm not talking about like somebody's coming after me and I'm trying to get out of the way of that. Yeah, I'm going to avoid that. I'm talking about what's naturally arising here. The epitome of neurosis would be to disallow that which is already happening. But still, I think I'm letting it happen. Because I'm accepting. I'm allowing. I heard about that. I heard about that. That makes sense. I'm going to do that. And off I go, not having asked, hardly ever, who's going to go and do that? Who's going to do this allowing? And how far is it going to go? And if you're unfortunate, you'll do what I did. You'll spend 25 years pretty much doing that. I'm going to allow it, 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 I'm going to allow it. Allow. You know what that allowed? It allowed me to keep going on allowing. I don't know whether you see the bad news here. Utterly and absolutely unsatisfactory. Because as much as you allow, lo and behold, life goes, you didn't allow this one yet. You didn't allow that one yet. All it takes is just one more human being who does something a little this way or that way. I didn't allow that one yet. And away you have to go, more and more and more and more and more. Allowing, 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 allowing. Where's the end? It's just one way to talk about this core teaching called samsara, perpetual wandering. And the mind can take that teaching and go, that has to go. So I can be free of habit and perpetually wandering and allowing, 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 allowing. That's not what samsara is talking about. That's not what the unborn, the deathless is talking about. There's absolutely nothing wrong or right about any feeling, sensation, perception, belief, including the belief that you're in here, including the judgment that would go the other way and say, that belief is okay. That's another judgment. You know what conceit actually is? It's thinking you're better or worse or equal to other people. I thought, oh, I got the better, worse thing. In fact, I got a lot of the worse thing and sometimes a little bit of the better thing, and it looks like that person over there has a lot of the better thing. I don't got this, like, even thing. That's conceit. Yes, you know why? Because it's comparison. We're equal, right? What sustains this bodily contraction with this apparent separate individual that owns it? And the answer is very clear. Not seeing the truth. What truth? Everything changes? I think I've seen that pretty clearly. But I still have this issue at times with contraction, with feeling I'm in it. Still seems to be ignorance here. If there's ignorance, then there's going to be clinging. If there's ignorance, there's going to be the other side of the coin of clinging, which is resistance. If there's clinging or resistance, there's somebody who thinks they need to cling or resist. Enough of me. Dogen, Zen Master Dogen, apparently only lived 53 years, 1200 to 1253. May we all be so fortunate to see so much as these few words will describe in 53 years on planet Earth. Catch his words. Life doesn't become death. For this reason, life is called the unborn. It is also taught that death doesn't become life. So death is called the undying. Life is complete in itself. Death is complete in itself. They are like seasons. We don't call spring the future summer, or winter the past spring. Gaining enlightenment is like the moon reflected on the water. The moon doesn't get wet. The water isn't broken. Although its light is broad and great, the moon is reflected even in a puddle an inch wide. The whole moon and the whole sky are reflected in one dewdrop on the grass. So key, enlightenment doesn't destroy the apparent person. Just as the moon doesn't break the water. The so-called person doesn't hinder enlightenment, just as a dewdrop doesn't hinder the moon in the sky. The depth of the dewdrop is the height of the moon. time of the reflection, long or short, proves the vastness of the dewdrop and the vastness of the moon in the sky. When we look at the ocean from a boat with no land in sight, it seems circular and nothing else. But the ocean is neither round nor square, and its features are infinite in variety. It's like a palace. It's like a jewel. Only to our eyes, only for a moment, does it seem circular. All things are like this. Although there are numberless aspects to all things, we only see as far as our vision can reach. And in our vision of all things, we must appreciate that although they may look square or round, the other aspects of oceans and mountains are infinite in variety. And that universes lie all around us. It's like this everywhere, right now, right here, in the tiniest drop of water. This is not about believing in anything. This is not about getting rid of a belief system and starting up another one. The great news is this is about direct experience. The way to see the teachings, the way to recognize for yourself is through direct experience. What's really true is that we start with simplicity, not complication. We start with innocence and freedom, not suffering and limitation. We begin unfettered, not fettered, seeking our way back to simplicity and unfetteredness. So where is this innocence? Did you hear it in Dogen's words? Did you hear the innocence? Did you hear the unfettered simplicity? Where is that which is prior to suffering? Because that which is prior to suffering is beyond suffering. Right now, possibly, it's right here, in just sitting quietly. It's right here in simply breathing, and simply hearing, and simply seeing, and simply feeling, and then suddenly, it's here in thinking. But suddenly, strangely, the thinking doesn't make false distinctions like it once did. It doesn't say, you're over there, I'm over here. And believe it. Something is somehow being said by everything that even this apparent you is not really separate. Not really apart. It just seems so sometimes. It's just a misperception that suggests. And then suddenly the word apparent makes complete sense. Suddenly the word appearance means complete sense. Suddenly it makes complete sense that nothing is not an appearance. It's like smoke that appears and disappears. It's like the dream that might appear tonight or appeared last night and then disappeared. It seemed real and then it was gone. It's like, who was Lao Tzu when he apparently walked away after giving the teachings into the mist? What was that disappearing act? At first, we are deluded to think we're seeing clearly. But then it's clear we're only looking through smoke. And the believing that the smoke was something, and then suddenly it's recognized as just an appearance. And that's what all phenomena is just an appearance. This is a disappearing act right here, right now, all the time. It's like being absorbed in a movie and losing your perception and your life story in the movie and then coming back to yourself. Only, actually, it's the other way around. The real movie is recognizing the apparent dream of individuality. And waking up from this dream is like becoming a child again, who really has no mental future or past, no story to uphold or fulfill. He or she is simply beingness itself. And we're that. We just have this added story thing, almost like a Star Trek move, coming up from beingness into another becoming of beingness. See, the story doesn't have to go. Didn't Jojen make it so clear? The person doesn't have to go away. That wouldn't be fair. Beingness is fulfillment because it doesn't need anything added nor taken from it. So in this sense, beingness is the same as freedom, ordinary original nature, which cannot be exclusive or excluded. Therefore, no one is deluded and no one gets enlightened. Nothing excluded means we're all in it together. The only thing that suggests otherwise is these concepts that some are spiritual and some aren't, that some are further along and others further back, that some children are more children-like than others. Conceptual understanding in this situation is only valuable in the sense that it brings us to the gate of beingness. And since we've got this conceptual process, how is this part of the enlightened mind? Now the Zen, this one's Hung Po. Hung Po, don't really know apparently where, actually not so much where, but what year he was born, but lived in year about 1800, a little bit before Dogen. The student asks Hung Po, does the Buddha really liberate sentient beings? Answer, there are in reality no sentient beings to be delivered by the Tathagata, that's the Buddha. If even self has no objective existence, how much less has other than self? Thus, neither Buddha nor sentient beings exist objectively. Nothing exists objectively. It just appears so. Existence, for most of us, connotes duration in time, doesn't it? And since everything is becoming something other than what it was the moment before, this we can see directly in experience. then in fact nothing exists except appearances. Things appear tangible, but in fact all there is energy, that's another word, which is in constant condition of flux or change. That's what the apparent individual is, an energy that's appearing and disappearing. And just in case you think there's an individual, ask what happens to the individual in deep sleep. Figure that out. Neuroscientists right now are probably having the hair on the back of their necks stand up, or the top of their heads even, maybe, as they are uncovering through their own paradigm scientific method that there is no such thing as an individual with free will and choice. And I would add to that, quite possibly, in fact, I'm going to go with certainly. Can I do that? They are not choosing to see this. The depth of the enlightened mind is appearing in the laboratory of modern science. It's not on CNN yet. And what is it? It's simply the absence of what was assumed to be there, but was never actually there, a mirage, if you will. It turns out individuality is a mirage. And along with that, the sense of separation and suffering are also mirages. Simply appearances, ephemeral and transitory. And that's why everything that comes and goes is also at times articulated as a dream. If the mind is attached to certain aspects of this dream, then it will say, that is not a dream, that is real. This timeless message that promises deliverance here and now, it arises and passes in and out of the minds of humans through time. And yet it's timeless in the sense that it's completely open and available always. And it was probably such a hair's width that discerned that these teachings even appeared in this realm for us. Because you may know the legend as it's been passed down that says the Buddha was so close after the awakening to just going off into the mountains and meditating. And some angel or something like that appeared to him and said, teach the Dharma for those with little dust in their eyes. And I can only imagine what went through his mind. He may have thought, that makes sense. But then the conundrum, how will I teach about nothing? How will I teach? They won't understand. He's not the only one. There are other great teachers who are so close to just walking into the mist. Lao Tzu gave it his best and apparently got frustrated and then walked into the mist because so many didn't get it. Nisargadatta Maharaj, same thing, ready to go, and somebody said, go back and help people. When there's nothing to do anymore, when there is no doer, when there is no actor, when there is no self, what is there to do? So this timeless message that promises deliverance arises and passes in the minds of humans through time, and yet it's timeless. And it's completely open and available. So much is this true, so much so is this true, that as far as we know, the last word that the Buddha uttered before passing was samma, samma sati. Samma sati means remember that you are a Buddha. In everything you do, in everything you feel, in everything you think, the real you, not the apparent individual. In every movement of consciousness, sammasati, remember you are a Buddha. My first true teacher of Vipassana meditation, S.N. Goenka, passed away just a couple weeks ago. Beautiful man, lived to 90. Said many things that just pierced. Just cut through the veil, just cut through the veil, just cut through the confusion. With such compassion and such equanimity and such humor. One thing he said that comes to mind now, he said, all beings are liberated. All beings are liberated. Same thing. Remember, you're the Buddha. And in case you don't know how to do that, stick around for tomorrow. That's it for a minute or two.